Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Mini Break, your daily podcast for the biggest storylines, results, and controversies from the tennis world. Today is Monday, September 16th. Big week this week. It's everyone's favorite team event of the year. No disrespect to Davis Cup, no disrespect to Fed Cup, no disrespect to Hopman Cup, but it's Laver Cup time. Always that fun time of the year. Team World versus Team Europe. Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal, Novak Djokovic, all on the same team as John McEnroe, Jack Sock, and Nick Kyrgios. Try and find a way to scrape out Team World's first win in the series. Joining me to preview that for the first time, to talk about the week that was at the Cary Challenger and some other storylines from the tennis world, is my doubles partner, partner in crime, and I'll say it, the man who does a damn good Bruno Mars impersonation, Maxwell Labauer-Rothman. Maxie, welcome to back to the Mini Break Pod.
Well, I feel like we have to just quickly mention why that came up, because it's just too funny. We were talking earlier just about like semi-formal prom asks and my absurd self.
That's actually not how it came up. The real way it came up, the real behind the scene for the listeners, of course, I cut you off. Hot start. Well, hey, Max, I miss you. But it's because you and I start every phone conversation with some sequence of singing and lyrics and back and forth. And we should say the reason we do it is because I am the worst singer known to mankind. But you're actually, like, very good. And so the harmony is – it strikes the right balance of amateur singing.
Yeah, it's nice. It's always a fun way to start a phone call. If any of you need a spice up your phone you know, intercourse life, you just start with a nice sexy song, and I promise you it'll go uphill from there.
And you should know, listeners, too, and I'll try not to get the copyright, so I'll only sing a little. We started today with "Beautiful Girl" all over, and that is exactly how we got into Rothman's Bruno Mars impersonation. But with that in mind, as we mentioned, a ton of tennis to talk about. For you listeners who are, you know, thinking long term, what am I looking for down the home stretch? Before we start, you should know today, me, Rothman, our friend James Foster McDonald, recorded a Great Shot podcast live on YouTube previewing the ATP players we will be watching most down the home stretch. We talked about some of the results from Cary and other events in that process as well when determining the guys we were talking about. So be on the lookout for that in podcast form on the Great Shot podcast feed later in the week. Cracked interviews-wise, really fun interview I did Friday night with Bethany Maddox-Sands, and it had a Friday night feel. We were loose. We were letting it rip. I called her B-Dog for 45 minutes during the pod. If that doesn't tell you it was a good time, I don't know what will, so be on the lookout for that. But Max Rothman, with all of that being said, we've got some tennis to talk about, and the place I want to start tonight, as we talked about last week, our big event to circle, given that it's post-US Open, there are a ton of American hardcourt challengers on the ATP side. Great chance for us to see players such as the Michael Moes, JC Aragonis, you know, Ty Kwiatkowskis, Noah Rubens of the world, as well as, you know, other players, 27, 28, still in that top 100 range. You also see guys in the 80s, 90 range dipping down to that, you don't want to say dipping down, but playing at the challenger level to accumulate some points, some confidence if they've had downside. So a very loaded draw. The place I want to start with a weekend, our quarterfinal match from Friday, an all-American next-gen thriller. Michael Moe taking on Tommy Paul, I believe for the fourth time in their career, maybe third. I think Tommy carries either a 2-0 or 2-1 record heading into that, but these are guys who have played, you know, dating back Kalamazoos and Junior Slams. They've been through it the whole time. Tommy in 97, Michael Moe in 1998. And this match, through the first two sets, really did live up to the hype. Michael Moe ultimately taking a 2-6, 7-6, 6-1 win over Tommy Paul. Now, we talked about Tommy winning in New Haven on the GSP, and we talked about it a little bit last week on the mini break. We've talked about a lot from his aspect, but I want to start with Michael Moe Rothman. You look at Michael Moe this season, this is a guy who has been plagued by injuries. Going into the week, 5-8 on the year, only 13 matches played. A lot, obviously, if you're 5-8, that indicates at least three first-round losses. But you look, first-round qualifying loss for him, 7-6 in the third at the U.S. Open. Three-set loss in Aptos in his first match. Three-set loss qualifying first-round City Open. Three-set loss qualifying to Tommy Paul again, 7-6 in the third in Atlanta. So he's been playing consistent. I should also say he won a match, round of 32 in Canada. First-round exits again, Winnetka, Wimbledon, so that and at Columbus. So again, and at Little Rock. Jeez, again, what this is stressing to me. I was trying to keep going until the injury happened. I didn't realize he got injured early January, right after the Australian Open, where he played the first round. He had the wild card or direct entry going in, I believe, and then didn't play until the French Open, where he lost first round qualifies. But you look at his year. So many ups and downs, just physically, to get back on the court, get this result. Let's start there. What did you see from Michael Moe that has you feeling inspired about his tennis moving forward?
Well, the things that I did like were his movement, and I think that was something that you could probably point to and say that could have been, you know, a little bit of concern considering he's just getting back onto the court and into the swing of things. But I really liked his movement. The forehand looks good. The serve looks good. I think the thing that I like to see in this match that, you know, that you didn't see necessarily, well, I shouldn't say that. They had a really close match with TP back in Atlanta, but he was just smart. He took the backhands down the line when he needed to. I think he played to TP's backhand a lot, which is something that I'll speak to because I'm a little bit – we talked a lot about TP today, so I'm trying not to repeat myself on him, but his backhand, it's a little stiff, and I think that, you know, people definitely will recognize that playing him, and so I think Mo did a good job playing to that. So I think it just his game overall looks solid. What's that face?
You think his backhand stiff compared to Michael Moe's? Okay, so just real quick on the record thing. I know I rambled there. He's 5-8 on the year. Got three of those five wins last week in New Haven. So really, he was 2-8 going into the year at that point. For him to get the three wins there and then make the final here, he ultimately loses to Seppi, and we will talk about that. But yeah, I mean, he just put together seven wins in 2 weeks. That's obviously, I think, what, three times what he had going into that. So that's a huge breakthrough for him. But for Michael Moe, you talk about his movement. I want to start there. He looks healthy. He looks a little bigger. I feel like he's 5 pounds too much muscle right now. Like, if he lost 5 pounds just to slim down, I feel like that could be a good thing.
Well, I don't know if 5 pounds is making or
five
breaking
to ten.
Michael
I'm
Moe.
Just saying. Well, because he's so fast, so explosive. But I feel like he's a little stiff.
Yeah, but I almost don't mind it. I want to see a little bit more pop out of him. I think he moves well enough as it is. But to the backhand,
I don't mean it from a movement point. I mean it from a fluidity. I think the ground strokes, he doesn't produce powers because, when he turns in, when he fully unleashes his body, as you see at times, he can hit the cover off of the ball. You see it with his serve, right? The way he explodes into it. That's an elite. It demonstrates his elite athleticism. I'm saying he's 5 to 10 pounds too heavy. He's maybe one of the, 5 to 10 best movers on the Challenger circuit when healthy. But for me, it's... he's so tentative. Everything he knows he's such a good mover. He knows he can make a match physical, but he's so reliant on that. And I believe Tommy goes down 0-3 in the first set breaker, gets back to 5-3 up in that second set breaker, TP gets back up to 5-3. And then Mo started taking some chances, and that's when he actually had more success. So I guess I agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing you have to take into account when you're playing at carry is those courts, I mean, you can just tell from the live stream, they're slow. They're definitely slow. It's like crazy. I mean, I was
Wait,
watching
have you played on those courts?
I have, yeah. I have once or twice. But yeah, I mean, you just watch these kick serves. I mean, you saw both of them step in on second serves and you know, put pressure on the other player. But yeah, I mean, it's just, like you said, deathly slow. So I think it's a little bit easier to rely on your movement when that's the case. But yeah, I mean, yes, Mo, his forehand's a little compact, and I think the backhand, like you said, with comparing it to TP, when I say it's stiff, I mean TP just doesn't follow, like his left arm just doesn't push through all the way on his backhand. Like you see him guide down the line backhands, and sometimes I just wish that if he really pushed that left arm all the way through the stroke, and I know you're smiling because I'm sounding like a tennis coach right now, but I'm serious. I mean, it's a little bit more guided than it should be. There are some points where I think he could end the point if he actually swung all the way through the ball and didn't guide it as much. So that's my only comment.
I have no criticisms of his technique. You talk about it for Tommy Paul. He had this match in his hands, and he was coming off of a New Haven title. Sorry, excuse me. Justifiably tired. You could see why physically he would wear up. But it was in that second set tiebreaker. I think it was a serve call. He thought the ball was out. The umpire overruled it and called it in. They replayed the point, and that bothered him. And then for him to come out in the third set the way he did, he really tanked the third 6-1, was lucky to get a game, was down 4-0 in the blink of an eye. And, you know, there was a moment where after the second set, he takes off his shirt, he tomahawks it into the crowd. I mean, I guess for Tommy Paul, huge net victory, right? He's now inside the top 100. He really has a chance to maybe even break that top 75.
He's at 84 now.
Yeah, something around there. And so really has a chance to break that top 75. But this was an opportunity wasted. Michael Moe, who in this match, 54 of 74 on first serves for 73% first serve percentage, wins 69% of those points. But only wins 40% of his second serve points. Tommy Paul, 4-4 on break point chances. It got really lopsided in the third set, but he was really doing the better job of protecting his serve for through those first two sets than Michael Moe. He did a great job of staying patient. He knew Michael did not want to come forward. We'll talk Davidovich-Fokina. There were a bunch of drop shots. Tommy Paul kept throwing in the drop shot, passing shot combo because of how hesitant Michael Moe was moving towards the net, how not confident he looked in those moments. And for a guy who's as physically imposing as Michael Moe, being a comfortable volleyer, being willing to move forward when you open up the court for yourself with some sort of athletic marvel of a play, that's got to be an essential feature of your game, because when you get opponents stretched because you can hit as well as you do on the run, you sneak in behind that, take time away from them. That's a winning play.
I mean, it's funny how often we talk about some of these young guys being hesitant to come to the net. And I think it's something that we've seen a lot of the top players, you know, progressively get better at over the years. I mean, think about Nadal back in the day, never used to come to the net. And you know, more and more we've seen him, you know, realize that that's something that he needs and you know, is important to, you know, shortening up points, but also just closing. I think that I agree with you there. It's a huge component. And I think as he gets more comfortable with it, he'll see some more success. But I think that's pretty much the story here. You know, seeing him get healthy, work on his game. He's ranked 186 in the world right now. I'm sure it'll go up after this tournament. And yeah, we'll definitely see a little bit more of Mo coming forward.
Yeah, it's a credit to him coming forward. Nice pun. Hey, great shot, because he's not coming forward. But you look at just through the rest of Kerry Michael Moe, ultimately a finalist where he loses to Andreas Seppi 6-2, 6-7, 6-3. But you look through the rest of the draw, some notable results. Noah Rubin, who has obviously been making huge waves off the court with his Beyond the Racket Instagram, Twitter, social media handle.
Behind.
His coffee. Yeah, Behind the Racket. Did I say Beyond?
Hey, good shot.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Behind the Racket. See, I don't want to give a free plug to them, because even though we're part of the, you know, we're all part of the Tennis Channel Podcast Network family, but, you know, it's always a little brother's fight, right? That's just how we do it. Excellent stuff for him there. But on the court, he hasn't had a great year. I think he's made 3 quarterfinals of Bredner, hasn't really made one since around the French Open, made that final in Playford at the beginning of the year. He gets the quarterfinals here, knocking off Chris Eubank 6-4, 6-7, 7-6. We've all seen the handshake where, you know, Eubank smacks him on the head, Eubank 6-7, Rubin 5-7, so it's a very fun contrast.
It was more like a hand to the face. It was like, take the face, shove it to the side.
Yeah,
it was good.
It was cute. It's one of those moments
cute
tennis Twitter,
is the exact word.
Tennis Twitter is this a criticism. Tennis Twitter loves to find itself cute, right? It loves to be like, oh my god, I stand for this. There's nothing I f***ing hate more than the word stan. But that is, I like Stan Wawrinka, as we talked about in today's great shot. We gave Wawrinka one of our most intriguing spots, but I f***ing hate the word stan. That and lit. You know my thoughts on lit. I'm more of a Lummis guy, as you're well aware. That was straight Lummis.
Well, there's humor, hummus, and Lummis, so... You gotta make sure you talk about the progression the of the word. But the funny part too, also Ruben's Instagram post afterwards. I was just thinking about this. So he posts this whole thing like, "What a match!" Blah blah blah. Like posted like a quote afterwards, and
This is after it's cute.
It was after a 7-6 win. But I was thinking like, if we played that match and you posted that, I would be so angry. And Mo's response was, "I genuinely hate you." And
or Eubanks. Perfect. Eubanks' response.
Eubanks' response. "I genuinely hate you." Yes. It's exactly the response I would have given.
I just like, what does stan mean? Where did we find it? That's not what the word stan means. Like, there's Pakistan. There's Afghanistan. There's Uzbekistan. Is this like, we are the stan country. We are Wawrinkistan. And, like, maybe that is where it comes from, but that's f***ing stupid.
Did you just say Wawrinka stan?
Yeah, I'm saying, like, that's what it's saying. It's like, we are stans of Wawrinka. It's just, like, this is so stupid. I hate it. I hate it so much.
All right, well, before we get too caught up in stan,
my hairline reflects that sort of rant. But, yeah, getting back to Carrie, I don't get it. And lit... Are we going to do... No. I'd just like, oh, dude, this is fire. I'd be like, well, put it out. Like, that's not good. It's just so stupid. Whatever. We have a whole dictionary to work with. No, it's just like, we're better than that. We're better... Whatever. Okay. Noah Rubin. Good result for him. He's also better than the results he showed, and I'm glad he gets a quarterfinal here because this is a guy who's won the Charlottesville Challenger before. We've seen him have success at the indoor hard courts. He could make a push. He's won that Australian Open wild card before. He's playing well enough to do it again now. You look at some of the other notable results. JC Aragone, another guy. Really up and down year for him to beat Ulysses Blanche. Really physical, 6-7, 7-6, 2 all retirement. Blanche, I think, screwed up his ankle coming down on a serve. He just didn't look comfortable after that, so he pulls out. But for Aragone to get a semifinal, I mean, again, on a slow court against a guy who can do, you give him enough chances, he's going to do something ridiculously athletic. I don't know about JC Aragone top 100, immediately. Mm-hmm. It's just the consistency week in, week out. But this is a guy who, if he puts himself in a position to make Australian Open qualifying, I mean, he did it at the U.S. Open a couple of years ago. There's no reason he couldn't do it again now.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I remember watching him, Wild Tennis Academy, however long ago. It was ridiculous. And he just, he's just... rips the ball. So
I stand for Virginia, so I'm all about UVA push.
Yeah. So but anyways, he's a beast. Definitely could see him, make it through a qualifying of a major like that.
Yeah. All right. Well, with that said, any other thoughts on Carrie?
I miss those courts.
Counterpoint, Orlando's our home now. We're done with Carrie. We moved on.
Yeah.
All I have is heartbreak and anger at Molly Fox when I think about Carrie.
Oh, man. I still vividly remember just sitting behind the court by the trees after the match. We shouldn't get into this.
Yeah, we'll save it for
that's also where the Red Rocket was born.
The Red Rifle. Rifle. Oh my god.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
All right, but with that in mind, there are other non-American Challenger results that we would like to talk about real quick, and one of the big guys we talked about on the GSPI forced Jamie and Rothman to listen to me preach about this guy.
Fokina.
who was a winner today in the Seville Challenger, knocks out another young next-gen player, Jaume Munar. I believe the result, a 2-6, 6-2, 6-2 winner. Rothman, again, I asked you just to watch some more highlights. We remember Davidovich Fokina had a breakthrough on the clay portion of the year, got his first couple of ATP wins earlier this season. But for him, he gets his first challenger title of his career here. He hops up to a career high, 108 in the singles rankings. He's top 100 in the live ATP race, which, again, that's the amount of points you've accumulated on the year this far. So what that shows me, he's played at a top 100 level. What did you see about Davidovich Fokina that you liked in this match?
So, I mean, there's a few things. One, I mean, it just looks like he's playing smart tennis. And I know I say that sometimes, but I think a lot of times some of the... a lot of the younger guys don't play the smartest tennis. They play either overly aggressive or they don't change up their game style when things aren't going right. And, you know, Fokina here... He didn't start off great, you know, that first set is, you know, he wasn't playing constructing points as well as he could have, kind of letting Munar dictate the play. And so I liked that he was able to change things up. He got a little bit more aggressive. You saw him step inside the baseline, take those backhands early, which I like to see. I mean, it was just drop shot central. There was probably 40 drop shots in this match. The clay looked gross, as we discussed before. This is just weird looking. But overall, I liked the way that he adapted to Munar's play. What are you smiling about over there?
This is stupid, but I try and make you laugh because I'm very fond of you. But I know when I broke you, and that Molly Fox joke's broke you. And when I get that belly laugh out of you, it keeps a smile on my face. Yeah. I just always enjoy hearing that from you because you have a very nice visceral gut laugh. with that being said, yeah, the circumstances were less than ideal for Davidovich Fokina. Last week, he made the final, and he was a 4-0 in a third set breaker of the first challenger final of his career, and he lost that match. To come back the next week and win in the fashion that he did, I mean, Davidovich Fokina, until that final, I don't think he dropped a set the entire week. And to beat Munar, one of his peers in Spain, to beat him 2 weeks in a row, that's a really, really impressive result. And again, you date back to even August after the U.S. Open. He made a semifinal the week before that. So to go semifinal, final, challenger title as a 19-20, I think he just turned 20 as the 20-year-old, that's the 3 week stretches we talk about. Can you prove it over an extended period of time?
I mean,
Tommy Paul has done what Davidovich Fokina has done, but like over the course of 3 weeks spread out over 7 months because of injuries. Davidovich Fokina has proven he can stay healthy, and yeah, it's all on red clay, but this is a guy who plays on red clay at a top 100 level.
Right. And I mean, you talked about his straight set wins. They weren't just straight set wins in this tournament before the final. He wins 1-2 in the semis, 3-0 in the quarters, 3-2 in the round of 16, and in his first round match, 6-1. So I mean, these weren't just wins; they were dominant wins. So he's clearly feeling himself. And again, the big question is, how is he going to translate that game into the hard court? Is he going to be able to be aggressive enough? Is he going to be able to, you know, handle the pace of some of these bigger guys? And that'll be the big question for him, you know, going forward.
So we talked about this a little bit in the GSP about Tommy Paul. And again, listeners, I go recommend that because we go in deep, as we always do on GSPs, about these guys and why you should be watching them. For Davidovich Fokina, I asked you this about Tommy Paul during the GSP. This is a guy now who's right around number 100. He's 108. So maybe he doesn't get into the Asian hardcourt ATP level events, the 250s, the 500s, rankings-wise. Maybe he get into qualifying, maybe not. But if you were him, now that you've established this level of success, would you do your best to play hard courts the rest of the season? Just because it's time to, you know, that's the next level. The season isn't always on clay, especially once you get past the challenger level.
I think different answer for Fokina than TP. I think Fokina needs to keep playing his clay and get points.
Just rack it up?
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't risk going to the Asia to the hardcourt swing where it might throw him off, ruin his confidence that he's built from all these wins. Keep playing the clay. Do your thing. Get some more points. Build up as many as you can so that you can go into 2020 with a strong point base and use those to get into the bigger tournaments and then not have to worry about the Challenger Tour, in the late season of 2020 like he is this year. So I think it's a different answer than TP where, you know, we've seen TP have success in the hard court and he's, you know, played a bunch of ATP tournaments this year already. I think you'd want to see him, you know, go to Asia and like Fokina, where you just want to see him get points in matches.
All right, that's completely fair. One last note on Munar. Munar earlier this year reached number 52. I think it was after he beat Zverev, right, in the Masters event or something like that. He was playing really well in the clay earlier this year. And then he lost 13 of his next 15 ATP-level matches. He's now outside the top 100.
And so, we were hot on Munar.
I mean...
We were. Yeah.
We were. We thought he was good, we thought this is how you know we Vicky Duval, whom I love, who is our Wednesday or will be once throughout the week, I'm not sure the exact day, on the mini break, always says we as well. She's like, oh, we love that. I don't know if we loved Munar. We liked him, but he's a little small. He's always been a little small. And at an
there was
ATP
always
level,
that caveat. We thought on the hard court, we were a little worried. That was one of those things. We were like, can he hold up on the hard court? Because he had such a good clay season, and he didn't hold up.
Yeah, and look, he's what, 21, 22 years old? He's got plenty of time as well. One's saying, and don't write him up. There's a reason he got up to that level, and to do it at that young age, it's a marker. I'm sure he's going to look back at this year and say success. I'm also sure he's going to look back at 13 of those losses and realize, I'm sure a bunch of them were in three sets. I'm sure he had a lot of winning opportunities. And so even to get a year of reps at the ATP level, you know, this isn't Jack Sock who's doing a 2-14 year at age 27. This kid is 20, 21 years old. So I'm not
he's
freaking out yet. It sounds like you... Yeah, exactly. It sounds like you aren't either. But just two more quick tennis storylines, and then we'll get into Laver Cup. UTR event. I know we talked about it. You sent me a text. That's how I have to bring it up. Kozlov last night, my boy, Steffi K, knocks off Sam Querrey, gets revenge for that Sacramento, or was it Fairfield Challenger? I think it was Sacramento back in 2014 where Querrey beat him in the final. Kozlov beats him here, ultimately loses to... Cracked interview, former guest, I will mention, Stefan Kozlov, you canceled on us. Querrey did not. Steve Johnson did not. Steve Johnson, who recently we had on the Cracked Interviews podcast, a great interview you should all go listen to, ends up beating Kozlov in today's UTR final. Rothman, I guess your Kozlov thoughts, your UTR thoughts, your Steve Johnson thoughts, just what do you think of this storyline?
I mean, look, last time, yeah, I mean, I was at the UTR event that Querrey won. And that's where, you know, I got to talk to him, and, you know, I got to see what those UTR events are like, and they're very legitimate. I don't think people should discount them at all. I mean, these guys, they're working out there. They want these wins at the UTR, events. So, yeah, I'm sure some people might be saying, you know, whatever, it's a UTR event. Querrey may not have been, you know, giving it his all, whatever. I think that's ridiculous. So it's a huge win for Kozlov. I mean, Kozlov has had, you know, an up and down year, and I think that's the kind of win that should make him feel really good and you know, give him some, again, confidence. Give him that moving forward. Stevie, you know, also...
Can I just plug real quick that it wasn't on a live stream for us to watch, and I looked around. Maybe it was, and maybe I didn't look well enough. But, hey, UTR, you need some live broadcasting commentators. I've got the duo for you.
Well, they did offer to have us come out, and unfortunately, it's in San Francisco. It's a little far, and as a current cripple, that wasn't the easiest thing for me to do. But hopefully we will get out there to the UTR event soon. But yeah, they definitely could use some Gruskin Rothman live stream commentating.
Yeah. Sorry, your thoughts on Stevie J though?
Well, look, we just had Stevie J on the podcast, right? I listened to that a few days ago, and you know, he even said, "Yeah, good, you did a nice job." But Stevie even said, like, this wasn't, you know, exactly the year he was hoping for, right? I mean, he's played a lot of challengers, and I'm sure that's not something that he wants to be doing. He's, you know, a guy that's used to playing Grand Slams and, you know, getting in. He's been seeded at Grand Slams, so. You know, not exactly the year he's been hoping to have. And I think any time you can go and get a title, that he said this also in your interview, which all of you, I'm going to plug it again, should go check it out. It's really interesting to hear him talk about college and just, you know, his life on the tour. But he said, you know, a win's a win. It doesn't really matter. You know, if you can go out there and be the last man standing, you know, that's word for word what he said. That's what you want at the end of the week. So whether it's at a Challenger, UTR, 250, it feels good, and it definitely makes you you know, confident moving forward. So I wonder how many. I think we should start a tracker on how many times I say confident moving forward, because it's happened too many times.
You say that like I say I completely agree. Yeah. All things we work on. You start hearing it and you build a habit. Yeah. What am I telling you? You're well aware. 350 episodes deep, Rothman. We're only getting – yeah, from here it's only downhill. Yeah. You quoted me talking to Stevie Johnson. I feel like it's not going to get much better than that. What a joke. Yeah, fun podcast. But then my last story – and I, by the way – now that it's post-US Open, we can do what we want on GSPs. There's a pros, cons, and what's going on with UTR episode that's just in the queue waiting for us to record. And I promise, listeners, we will get to that at some point before 2020. But my last fun fact for you, and we haven't played a game of Alex's Trivia in a while, so we'll do an abridged version of that right now. Today, Nicolas David Lonel, I apologize if I mispronounced that, became the first man born in 2002 to win a title on the ATP level. My question to you, well, you're not going to know this one, because Carlos Alcaraz García, the man who was born in 2003, became the first 2003 player to win a title earlier this year in July. But my question to you, 95, 96, 97, name the three first title winners.
96 was Fritz.
96 was Chorich.
Oh,
April 2013. God, it could be a futures level. Keep that in mind.
Yeah. 96 was Chorich. Wasn't Schappo? No, he's
Schappo's 99. Yeah, but yes, he was the first 99.
FAA was 2000.
Yep, and Jason Sung, who we got to see last year in Stowe, was 2001.
Yeah, so 96, 97, 98. Chorich. Was Tsitsipas one of them?
Tsitsipas in 98, no. The 98, you're not going to get this one. Duck Healy, Death player.
Definitely.
Ben Rothenberg's written on him many times, a fantastic story. Mm-hmm. An incredible tennis player, not just Def, but the first title winner of 98. 97, can you get it? It should be one of two guys in your head. You're not going to know their birth years. That's weird. But I do, and it's one of two guys in my head. I'll give you a hint. Both of these guys made the – well, I mean, I know the 97s. That's my thing. I got to know that younger competition. I was like, I'm still better than this player when I was 16.
Well, now that I – when I said Fritz and then you said Chorich, I forget that we're – We're potentially looking at guys who are, you know, top 20 right now. Yes. So
my hint to you, both of them made better than expected runs at the U.S. Open who are born in 97. This guy, one of the breakout players of Cincy and the U.S. Open. That's my hint to you.
Of Cincy and U.S. Open?
Medvedev? How far back can you think? Not Medvedev, no.
I mean, had good Cincy and
No, that's good. He's a 96er. He's a 96er.
Sheesh.
Bigger forehand than you, and you know I don't say that lightly.
Bigger forehand than me, Kyrgios.
No, he's a 95. Come on. No,
I know. He's.
I'm glad, though, that you acknowledge Kyrgios has a bigger forehand than you. This is a breakthrough for us.
Dude, he has a massive forehand. Had a good breakthrough. I don't know why I'm it's late.
Beat Federer, and then beat Kyrgios. Beat Kyrgios, actually, at the U.S. Open.
You beat Kyrgios at the U.S. Open? Mm-hmm. This year?
This year.
Who beat Kyrgios?
Andrei Rublev did. 1997. I'll bail you out from there. First winner, November 2013.
That's how you know I'm tired. Yeah, exactly. We just did a whole U.S. Open series of pods, and I couldn't remember that Rublev won. Anyways.
102 on the East Coast, and you're tired. Yeah, I guess I'll call that the broken foot syndrome. No, that was my last fun fact. But with that being said, one last thing we want to lightly get into to just tease you guys on the subject.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Of course, I am talking about the week's big event, the Laver Cup, finally taking place this week. what we're going to do today, because we'll talk even more in depth about, you know, the little things, the social media fire, what to expect each day, what the formats are going to look like, all of those things later on in the week. But just real quickly, Rothman, let's go through the rosters and what we're looking at for Team World this year. I'm trying to find the roster. Oh, here we go. For Team Europe this year. Let's start with the good stuff. Obviously, the big boys coming together. Rafael Nadal, Roger Federer making their return to the court together. Nadal taking last year out. Djokovic taking his place. People are in love. Ugh, almost as much as I hate Lit, almost as much as I hate Stan, calling people's names and putting it together. Team Fadal. That's me making a stabbing sound effect. I don't even need it from you. Actually, Westoff, give me a samurai sword sound effect, please. A little seppuku time. Yeah, but, you know, people obviously very excited to see Federer and Nadal together. You also have Dominic Thiem, not coming in the best form, but Alex Zverev making his return. And then two new additions, Tsitsipas and Fognini, who honestly, to me, the two most exciting players on Team Europe.
Yeah, I mean, Team Europe just, oh, they're so stacked.
Team is crazy. Those seven are just, like, so that's
also alternate.
Go ahead.
Alternates RBA. So keep in mind they're alternates RBA. Captains Borg, of course. Team World. I mean, we've got Isner, you've got Raonic, you've got Kyrgios, Chapeau, Jack Sock, and Fritz. Like, it's a it's varsity versus JV. It's just ridiculous. I mean, there are some potential good matchups in there. I mean, I think we're 100% going to see a Nadal-Kyrgios singles match. I think there's no question about it.
You think Nadal would agree to do that? You don't think he's going to be like, no. Like, no thanks.
I don't need that in my life.
Yeah, like, yeah. I'm not doing that.
I mean, if that doesn't happen, you're going to get Kyrgios versus Fed. You might get a Raonic-Nadal match. You got to put Isner against Team, dude.
Isn't there a law that you can't have Isner and Raonic on the same team? Like, Kevin Anderson is spicy. I get that. Last year, he was as good as any player
He looked so good.
Yeah.
His Djokovic match?
Yeah, he beat him. And so, I got that. But what is... I know FAA turned him down.
Also...
Where's Delpo? Give me Delpo or Schwartzman or just something. Are Russians Team World or Team Europe? Do we know yet? Because we haven't seen a Russian play.
I feel like they should be Team World.
A lot of people consider Russia part of... That's a story for that's another.
But the fact that Team World's alternate is Jordan Thompson... I like Jordan Thompson, but come on. Like, what's happening here?
Like, the redeeming quality is if everyone on the team is rocking a Jordan Thompson stash. Like, that'd be hilarious. Like, Fritz has a little pencil stash because, like, he colors it in. Chapeau's just like, look, guys, I can't do that. Like, that's just not happening. Yeah. But that would be sweet. Or if they go no shave for this entire week and they all just come out rusty. Like, that would be interesting. But you look at this roster and you're like, I know, Delpo wasn't going to play. I'm shocked Schwartzman's not back on the roster this year. Nishikori banged up, probably doesn't want to play. I know Khachanov just had a kid, so you get that. But if Russia was indeed available to play for Team World, like, why aren't we seeing him there? Look, it's Alex Dimenauer. I guess, like, do you put Dimenauer on instead of Raonic? Like, I don't really know about that. Like, I don't know who team – the obvious ones are Delpo and Schwartzman and Nishikori. Like, those three, if healthy, would give them a fighting chance. You watch Delpo in this environment versus anyone in singles, hello. But you look at this Team World roster – They look good in doubles. You know, Kyrgios and Sock, or Sock – they have the best doubles player in the world in Jack Sock. So, like, they have that going for them. But I don't know. Kyrgios and Sock will play together. I bet Isner and Sock play together. I would like to watch Chapeau Sock. That, to me, would be a really fun team.
Yeah.
Don't let Fritz anywhere near the doubles. Let Fritz take his shot at someone in singles, because I think, like, him versus Tsitsipas, that could be fun.
Dude,
but, like, I don't want to see Fritz.
Give Fritz Zverev. Dude, Zverev is not good right now. Fritz could come out there. I don't know.
I feel like Alex Zverev looks at Taylor Fritz and he's just like, I do everything better than you. Like, I'm taller, I move better, I volley better.
Way better backhand.
His serve isn't better, but it should be. Yeah, like, your backhand's good. My backhand's unreal.
Yeah.
Like, I guess Fritz's forehand's probably better.
It might be bigger.
I mean, that was – no, that was hyperbole. I don't mean that. Taylor, I love you. You've been so kind to our Cracked Rackets family. I just happen to be quite fond of Alex Zverev's game. Yeah, I mean, I saw – I mean, there. I feel like there's been a slight negative backlash recently to Laver Cup because – and here's why. And some of it's justifiable. They're counting Laver Cup wins as real match wins, like ATP listed matches, and they're treating the Laver Cup as though it's a serious event, and in reality it's just a grand staged exhibition that happens to be really fun and intriguing to the average tennis fan, but there's no practical implications, or at least if some fans would argue, I should say, that there are no practical implications. I feel like I'm speaking for both of us. I could not disagree more. Like, why can't we just enjoy this? Why do people have to get so mad about these little things? Like, oh, but this is going to count to Federer's win total. And then Novak's win total is going to look worse. I'm like, who gives a flying fuck? We don't get to see nearly enough tennis. Like, get over it. Or in the team environment, the guys clearly are having fun on the court. Is it a Grand Slam level intensity? No, but you're going to try and tell me 2 years ago Kyrgios Federer playing with the match on the line wasn't as fun of a match in 2017, I guess it was, as any match we saw? No, you're crazy as well. You don't like the third set breaker. You're a, oh, I'm a best of five set tennis. It just is the purity of the sport. Go f*** yourself. Like, we want to have fun as a tennis community. This is one of the few times where we really get to have that fun because the creativity, the imagination, they're playing singles, they're playing doubles, they're playing together. You like Fadal. You get to see Fadal. I shouldn't think about this. And tennis Twitter is such a small, like, not really important, kind of important part of the community. And we're so fond of them. Huge fans of tennis Twitter. Obviously, that's why we're involved in it, you know. But it's just like, I get people don't want to watch, like, aren't enjoying it. Don't watch it. There's Challenger tennis to watch. There's other ATP events or WTA events to watch. Just like, get over it. It makes me so upset sometimes that the joy that is Laver Cup, because it really is such a different event than anything. And yeah, Davis Cup, Fed Cup, ATP Cup, Hopman Cup. I think Hopman Cup is actually the most similar because we see players in a similar relaxed sort of mindset, right? The Hopman Cup, you're not playing for huge stakes, but it's men and women on a team competing for your country. Not that Laver Cup is country, but Europe versus world, the basic standard of team tennis adds an added dynamic. It's just like, why can't we enjoy that? I hate when people are trying to take away my fun, Maxie.
Yeah, did you get it all off your chest? Are you good now?
That, between that, Lit, and Stan, it's been a ranty type of pod. That's how you know it's late.
I know. Well, look, you pretty much said it all. I mean, I feel, you know, fairly similar. The main thing that is just ridiculous is, like, guys, you're seriously going to pass up the opportunity to watch Djokovic, Nadal, and Federer on the same team? Like, are you crazy? Like actually.
Well, no Djokovic, but Nadal and Federer.
Sorry, but previously we've had Djokovic and Nadal Fed. So, like, yeah. Like, are you really about to pass that up? Like, you're crazy. Like, you're literally just getting the most entertaining side of tennis for a couple days. Like, just relax. Like, just relax. So, I don't know. I could go on a similar rant, but I don't know if everyone wants to hear Gruskin rant 2.0.
And look, you know, I feel like, I'll just say, because I'm very fond of him as a human, but Paul Timmons, at Paul T Tennis, like, sometimes he goes on these rants where he just feels the need to be the devil's advocate, and it's like, not this, you really got it, this is the fight you want to pick again, on top of all of the other fights you want to fight this one. It's like, come on, Paul T, this is not the fight, let us have a little fun. I really appreciate that you take devil's advocate. He also just recently wrote an excellent piece about the inequalities of the tennis pay system and the opportunities and all of these different things that I really encourage listeners to go check out. But give us Laver Cup. Back off, man. This one's ours. But with that being said, Rothman, we'll talk more Laver
there's
Cup throughout
more
the week.
Laver Cup
we'll
coming.
Talk. Yeah, there's plenty of tennis action every week. Any final thoughts from you?
No, I'm ready for this time next week to post Laver Cup to see how it all goes down.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it. And again, throughout the week on our mini break, we'll be talking some aspect of Laver Cup each and every day. We'll also be talking about the tennis throughout the week. So give that a listen. Of course, This podcast, the Great Shot Podcast, Cracked Interviews, as I mentioned, will have content coming out across all three different platforms throughout the week. So like, rate, subscribe, review, all of those, share them with your friends. You know, we always appreciate it. If you guys have any feedback, we would love to hear it. You know, if you've missed any of our content, you know the website by now, crackedrackets.com. For the more immediate updates throughout the day, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, at crackedrackets, at Great Shot Pod, at Mini Break. Again, a huge shout out as always to our super producers, Max Fligner and Daniel Westhoff, who not only have a job to do, but I'm going to add this in the end now as well. It's time to change it up. Hundreds of thousands of dollars, Westhoff. That's how much we...
Hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, that's how much we, Rothman and I, value you. But with that being said, for my lovely co-host, the 1.05 version of Bruno Mars, for our super producers, Max Fligner and Daniel Westhoff, and from our entire team at both the Tennis Channel Podcast Network and Cracked Rackets, I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. Maxie, what do we tell them to start off the week?
That's a break.
And we will talk to you all tomorrow. Thanks, everyone.